Okay, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer working remotely, Bill Poposky, and we have survived. It was called Winter Storm something or other, Kraken or something
Keenan.
Like
that. Keenan.
What was it? Keenan?
Keenan.
Keenan. A good Irish name, I presume.
You know, I was thinking about that today, Rick. I remember the blizzard of 78. Are you going to remember Winter Storm Keenan and what year it happened?
You know, it's an interesting thing, by the way, Tim. That storm in 78, for those of us in long of tooth, that was a 2 or 3 day storm. And as I recall, the problem with that one was a couple of things. One, obviously there was no social media, there was no internet, we didn't have access to constant updates every second, and so the only way you got your weather was either by the newspaper, the radio, or television. And then number two, it was a long duration storm with that heavy wet baloney. And interesting that we could go through what, well, here in Cape Ann, I think we probably had 20, right around in West Gloucester where I live, probably 25 inches. But it was in a 24-hour period. But Tim, we're back in action now. I mean, it's incredible how efficient the DPW has been in the weather forecasting and all that stuff.
Yeah, it really was amazing. And you know, think of the cars that were trapped on 128. And the pictures from the newspapers, from the helicopters, of only seeing rooftops.
Yeah.
You know, people got out of their cars and basically walked away on 128. It was incredible.
Yeah. Yep. And the thing about this one that I find amazing is, you know, we had sustained winds of probably 40 miles an hour, but there was one gust reported, I think, at Rockport of 80 something miles an hour. And it's just amazing to me how little damage happened, and the fact that you know, the big thing of any storm is, hey man, if you got power, you're okay.
Yeah, you know, the grid system is obviously better. It was strengthened afterwards. But yeah, this was, you know, this stuff, 30 inches of snow on Sharon and Stoughton within basically 24 hours.
Yeah.
And not even 24 hours. It's just an incredible amount. I look out in the backyard and I go, oh my God, this is one storm. And even back on the blizzard of 78, I remember driving to General Edwards Bridge in Lynn, walking over the bridge down along Revere Beach into Winthrop to pick up a paycheck. I had to walk from Lynn, from the Saugus River, into Winthrop to collect
the paycheck. Roads were closed for weeks.
Drive there.
Roads were closed for weeks, and the National Guard was in. And in this one, I didn't, because of the way that where we live, the way the wind drifts, Tim, my driveway was practically bare. So I went into Gloucester today, and the snowbanks on the sidewalks are humongous. It's tremendous. So hopefully those of us on the North Shore can appreciate that we escaped the worst of it. I feel bad for those down, particularly on the Cape, I guess it is. That's where they got hit the worst.
Sharon, Stoughton, Quincy got 30 inches as well.
Really? But did they lose power, do you know? I know it was the South Shore that lost power.
I don't know, but at one point I saw on the TV 109,000 people were without power, but obviously we weren't one of them.
Yeah, so we lucked out. Now, needless to say, everything was canceled, excuse me, in terms of high school sports over the weekend, necessarily so, and most of those have been rescheduled on makeup dates, and some of them for actually next weekend. And Tim and I are going to take a look at the power rankings, the Boston Globe power rankings here in this half hour, particularly in hockey. But we'll do some other stuff as well, and we'll bat around some other things. And before I ask you, Coach, about the NFL playoffs this weekend, I want to just mention we have three scores in today in boys hockey, and they are of interest. Triton in Division III. Beat Melrose by a score of 3-1, and they are Division II. Lincoln Sudbury in Division I, number 14 in Division I, I might add, beat Boston Latin by a score of 6-3. And this is the one that might generate the most interest. Number 1, St. John's Prep, 6, Malden Catholic 3. I'll get that right. And St. John's Prep is number 1. Malden Catholic is number 12 in Division 1. So we'll talk a little bit about more about those rankings here coming up, and I'll see if I can get Tim to explain to me what this, what the hell it all means. But in the meantime, Tim, you know, we talked last week. Oh, by the way, we still will have Gary Larrabee. He's going to talk some golf here in a little while. Tim, did you get his agenda?
Yes, I did, Rick.
Okay, all right, good, because I always appreciate your helping me with that. And then Mike Grenier will come by and talk some pro basketball. He's also going to relay to us a story about interviewing an opponent other than a Boston Celtic that he has talked with over the years, and give us some anecdotal, give us a story about that. Anyway, Tim, last week we talked about how great that divisional rounds were. All four games came down to the wire, and damned if they didn't do it again in the conference finals.
Yeah, you know, you wonder what's taking the NFL so long to have this kind of competitiveness in the playoff system. How many times have we seen one team or the other just get blown out by the opposition? 27-24 for the Chiefs, you know, overtime game-winning field goal again. And then the night game, the Niners, on the quirkiest of plays to seal it for the Rams. You know, Jimmy G going down almost sacked, and he spins around and just trying to get rid of the ball. You know, ends up being picked off to seal the deal. And, you know, kind of tough for Jimmy, thinking, okay, that's going to be the last pass he'll ever remember throwing for the Niners. But it's like, oh my God, you know, you couldn't turn away because you didn't know if they were going to get down and get points and take that game away. So it has, it's definitely proved worth watching. Now, can the Super Bowl live up to the expectation of the fans, where this is going to produce a winning margin of between 1 and 4 points? Could very well. You know, you've got two guys that have never been there before, one in his second year and one in like his 12th year. So it's going to have a lot of intriguing angles. Let's put it that way for the bet makers, for the odds makers, and things like that. It's just going to be a crazy couple of weeks as we keep hearing, what's going to be happening.
I think a couple of things that stand out for me, Tim, is the complete ineptitude of Patrick Mahomes in the second half, which I've never seen. And the other thing is, I don't want to call it an ineptitude of the coaches, because, you know, I can't even imagine how much these guys go through, what they do, and how many hours they put in at a professional level. But from a layperson's viewpoint, Tim, three of the four coaches I watched yesterday were horrible. I mean, they just made the silliest of mistakes that you, when you're a kid watching the game, you learn about from these pro analysts. And that stunned me that three out of the four, the only coach I didn't see really screw up was the Cincinnati coach.
Yeah, or even the officiating. You know, the big thing now is on Twitter earlier, you know, was a high school coach going, you know, the analysts are going, oh yeah, you can't have 9 men on the line of scrimmage. And this high school coach reminded him, no, you have to have 7. You can have as many as you want.
Right.
On the line of scrimmage, but you have to have 7.
Well, that was the analyst's mistake. That, I don't think that was the official's mistake, because they didn't call a penalty or anything like that.
No, they didn't call a penalty, so the official did the right thing.
Right.
But the analysts are going, no, you can't have 9 men on the field.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just was clock management, calling timeouts, challenging plays that, are you kidding me? You're challenging that?
oh, I was really hoping that the Rams would lose that game just so head coach could get burned for blowing all his timeouts early in the fourth quarter. I'm thinking, are you serious?
I know.
What, two timeouts on challenges in the second half? Oh, you want to be fighting right there on the field.
And I feel sad for Garoppolo. I feel glad for Stafford. Good grief. I mean, you know, you play 12 years for a bottom feeder, you know, and then you get a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Joe Burrow looks like the next big thing, but the most stunning thing of all the games for me yesterday afternoon was the second half play of Patrick Mahomes, and I'm just blown away by that, Tim.
Yeah, he looked frazzled. He wasn't connecting on the passes that, you know, we've seen him make hundreds of times. It's like, well, you know, boy, every dog has his day, but he picked the wrong day to have it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's going to be fun. I guess I'm sort of going to root for Cincinnati, but I don't have any dog in the fight because, you know, I'd be happy for Stafford. You know, these guys put in their time. And for many of them, it's a...
My wife asked me yesterday, you know, who was I going to, you know, favor? And I said, you know, I don't really care. At this point, you want to see your... Because, well, like you... You know, no dog in the fight. So let's just see a really competitive game.
Right.
Where, yeah, it holds the audience. It comes down to the last minute. Somebody's got to make a play. Somebody's got to screw up. And let's go from there.
Well, when the NFL, over the weekend, when the announcement came a little premature that Brady had retired, NFL Network ran all of the Patriots Super Bowl games with Brady in them. And, geez, I forgot how good they were. Man, were they fun.
I love that, you know, every time you get the Brady supporters on the Twitter, and they start throwing up all the stats and all the chit-chat about Mahomes and all the other teams being great. And they go, okay, in the same spin that Mahomes has one, Brady already had two and been to... Four Super Bowls. You know, it's like, okay.
Well,
you know?
It's absurd. His statistics, his performance. And I kind of hope he plays one more year on the one hand. But if he doesn't, God bless him. He has given the fans here in New England an incredible performance every Sunday. My wife learned to love football. We can watch football in this house now on weekends. And I can thank Brady for that. So I kind of hope he plays one more year. But if he doesn't, okay, he's still going to live on forever, man, as the GOAT.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be, would it be hard for him to hang around in Tampa for that one more year, you know, if he doesn't have all of the weapons and they play at the level that you need to play at and have the kind of luck you need to have in order to get to the playoffs and win the thing? You know, again, there's speculation that he might not want to stay, you know, in Tampa. Plus you gotta hang around with Arians, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess McDaniels is going to be going out to Vegas, so you know, that could work. Hey, listen, final question, I think, with the pros, Tim, and then we're going to take a look at some high school stuff. Rodgers or Brady for MVP?
Well, neither one extended them into the, you know, later postseason.
Yeah, but the MVP MVP is for the regular season.
Team, you know, they forecasted both of them to go deep. Okay, they both did that. You know, what Brady did at his age, dragging that team along to repeat. I mean, we got to be homies. You got to go Brady. I mean, you know, Rod, I'm just so sick of Rodgers. I wish I could catch him with a pair of barber shears in my hands and give him a new haircut.
Well, or a shower.
I know. With that haircut, he does not look like he showers very often.
I know. Well, the thing is, remember, the MVP is for the regular season, not the postseason.
Right.
So it's for the first.
It's a good thing because neither of them would.
Right.
Neither of them would win it.
But Brady led in every.
You know, I mean, you look what Brady did in terms of wins, passing yardage, passing touchdowns. It's hard to dispute those numbers. I'm sorry.
He led the league in touchdown passes. in passing attempts, in completions, and in yardage. That's not the Triple Crown, man. That's a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and at age 44, it's ridiculous. It's just absurd.
Right, yeah.
It can't be done. So, it just, nobody's ever going to, you can't do that. It's got to be a sign. They're going to find out when Brady passes away, they're going to do an autopsy 100 years from now and find out that he was an alien. That's it. So, you know, because he's probably going to live to be 150.
Oh, Could be.
All right, Tim, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and take a look at the high school power rankings according to the Boston Globe. And again, we gave you the St. John's Prep hockey score today. They beat MC 6-3. And we'll take a look at that and some other stuff. And, of course, we've got Gary Larrabee coming up and Mike Grenier later on as well. You're listening to
Okay, Rick, do me a favor.
Yo.
Call me back so I can get you on my speakerphone.
Will do. All right, Coach.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, so we'll take a break and do that and see if actually it was nice and clear with him on the phone without being on the speakerphone, but whatever. Let me just find the right button here, press that thing, and we'll be back. Thanks for being with us. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're going to take a look at the power rankings. That means I'm going to take a look at them and describe them to Tim, I guess.
Oh, I've got partial numbers.
Yeah. All right.
So,
well, anyway.
I don't know if I can get the whole thing.
What I'm doing, what's interesting, and I'm just trying to find, you know, they're talking about a common ranking algorithm, blah, blah, blah. And the power rankings are, they're listed according to record and something called MOV, which is the margin of victory, SOS, which is the strength of schedule, and then the rating. And atop everybody in Division I hockey, probably no surprise, is St. John's Prep at 10-2. Now, they've got two losses, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams below them, all the way down to number 11, have only one loss. But the prep strength of schedule is just, I want to say shoulders, head and shoulders above everybody else, but pretty much. So their strength of schedule is very strong, according to the Globe, and their margin of victory is almost an even 2 goals. So they are ranked number 1 in Division 1. Catholic, Xaverian is number 2. Catholic Memorial is number 3. And I'm just looking here on the North Shore. Reading is at 13, and Lincoln Sudbury has moved up to Division One, and Lincoln Sudbury continues to play really good hockey. They're 10-2, but they're ranked at number 14. St. Mary's is ranked at number 22 with a record of 5-6-3. Bishop Fenwick is ranked number 29 in Division One, and Lynn Classical, this can't be hockey. Because Lynn is a combined team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got Lynn Classical in Division One with a record of 1-11. Well, that's kind of weird, but let me just make sure I'm in the right thing here. St. John's Prep. And let me just click on what they did today. Let's see, go over here. The Prep. Don't go away. Yeah, they beat Malden Catholic. So this is hockey. This is correct. They got St. John's Shrewsbury next, then BC High, Catholic Memorial, Newburyport, Franklin, and Maskenomet. So the prep coach looking good as they usually do in just about everything.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, as usual, as the season goes along, the prep just gets better and better, yet I can't get anywhere in this thing because just casing the girls volleyball. Let's try that. It's really a thing, but a strong program. It is occasionally, quite a few times, you look at them in the beginning of the season, and they're trying to gel, and then, boy, before the halfway mark, it's starting, and they just start rolling over people, and they take on all comers. And, you know, CM doesn't seem to be a problem for them right now.
Well, CM is at 10-2-1. The prep is at 10-2. And CM is, they are ranked number 3. Let me just see who they have left. They've got the prep again on February 9. And, of course, the prep, as you mentioned, Tim, rolled over them 5-1. And recently, last week, St. John's Prep also beat BC High 2-1 and St. John's Shrewsbury 4-2. So no question about it, the prep is on a roll. Now, excuse me, let me see if I can get down to Division II now. What's interesting in Division II is we have three North Shore schools at the top. Tewksbury is number one. With a record of 11-0, and then Maskenomet and Gloucester, identical records of 10-2, but Masco is ranked number 2, and Gloucester is ranked number 3. So it looks like in Division 2, and also, by the way, Newburyport is number 9. So you've got three schools in Division 2 that are powerhouses this year in high school hockey.
Yeah, it's always good to see North Shore because, I mean, you know, this region has such a history and tradition of outstanding hockey. It is always good to see teams being recognized for their success.
Well, what's interesting, Tim, you can't see it, but Newburyport is number 9 with a record of 6-6-1, and their rating is 1.27, okay? Now, 6-6-1, the number 10 team, one team behind them, is Silver Lake with a record of 10-3. But, you know, their strength of schedule is less than half of Newburyport's.
Yeah, you know, it's talent, you know. It's who's got the talent, and how much talent do you have?
I just wonder how you figure that strength of schedule.
You look at some big schools, and they just don't field basketball players. But football, they're dominant. Hockey, they dominate. It's not distributed evenly or proportionally to schools, no matter how big they are.
Marblehead in Division II is at 16. Beverly is at 21. And those are the North Shore teams in Division II in high school hockey, boys hockey. In Division III, Linfield. Linfield is a power. They are number 4 right now. Their strength of schedule has hurt them a little bit because it's a little less than the teams above them, but they're playing awesome hockey, and they are ranked number 4, highest rated North Shore team in Division 3. Number 1 is Marlboro with a record of 11-0, and their margin of victory is 2.5 goals per game. Hanover is in second, Scituate third, and then let's see if we can find any more schools here. North Reading is at number 13. They're 9-2-1 right now. Triton, which won today over Melrose, is down at number 22. And that's it, I think. Everett is number 40. That's it. Division 4, Winthrop, they're hanging in there. They have a record of 5-4, but they have a strong strength of schedule. And so they're right behind Stoneham, Sandwich, and Norwell. And let's see if we have any other North Shore teams there. Hamilton Wenham is at number 19. Emsbury is at number 20. Rockport is 22. Saugus at 27. Swampscott having a tough season so far at number 33. So that's those are divisions 1, 2, and 3. Now, Linfield is playing, oh gosh, let me go find that schedule. Pop it up by the good St. John's. Here it is, Linfield. Now, Linfield played Gloucester earlier in the season, And coach, that was an 8-5 win for the Fishermen, but it was closer, a heck of a lot closer than that. And the final game of the regular season between these two schools will be at Gloucester on February 23. I'm not going to be able to go to that game. I think I'm going to be attending, is it Disney something or other with my grandchildren? Yeah, but I'm going to try to get over to, Peabody on this Saturday as, Linfield will be hosting North Reading. I'd like to see that game and, at least, catch up with them. So, Linfield out of league, man, they're playing, Masconomet. You know, they're playing Gloucester twice. They're not fooling around. So they've got a good shot to be a high seed in the Division III tournament. Gloucester and Masconomet should be high seeds in the Division II tournament. And of course, St. John's Prep should be up there at the top in Division I. And Tim, this is what? February 1 tomorrow. So what are we? Three weeks away maybe from the end of the regular season, something like that?
Yep.
That's crazy.
I know. It goes by so quickly now.
It does. And, I tried to get a hold of some, well, let me point this out. On every week we have, the Salem News, Sports Writers podcast hosted by Bill Newell. And of course the Sports Writers are, executive sports editor for the Salem News is Phil Stacey. Matt Williams is the assistant executive sports editor. Nick Giannino is a sports writer. Nick Kukru is the sports editor of the Gloucester Times. And those guys have a round table with Bill Newell. That posts every week, usually on a Tuesday or a Wednesday at around 8 a.m. And this week it will be at 8 a.m. And those guys, man, you got to listen to them because they're going to give you the names, the statistics, the plays, the highlights of everybody. So please tune in or at least check out the website beginning on Wednesday at 8 a.m. or anytime thereafter, and they'll bring you up to speed on all of this stuff. And again, meantime, we're going to try to see if we can get in a game or two here. I wanted to broadcast that last Gloucester game, but that ain't happening. Hopefully in the spring or again in the fall, we'll get back to our regular live broadcast schedule. So I don't know, Coach, any thoughts before we turn it over to Gary?
Not really. You know, the Bruins are turning into the Celtics, it seems, at times. You know, they win one, they lose one, they win one, they lose one. It's like, stop.
Yeah. Well, they're on a road trip.
Three kids.
Yeah. They played well in January. They played very well. They hit a little bit of a bump. They're 1-1-1 on the road, but they have they played very well. They still got some catching up to do. They're ensconced in fourth place, but they have a good record. The concerning thing is goaltending. Tuukka does not look to be up to it, and you know, Linus had a tough game, and the kid, you know, he's a kid, so that's going to be something to watch, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, Tuukka came back without adding any kind of, you know, minor league fine tuning to get ready. He just decided to come back and play for the big team, and that rust is showing. You know, he's given up goals that he might not have given up in the past, and you know, again, it's on the defense also to step up and give him a little bit of extra help.
I just got an email from Kyle Gaudette. I just missed we missed connections with him. I was going to have him try to get him on talk about the Cape Ann League upcountry. He is the sports editor of the Newburyport Daily News, and my typewriter won't type. My keyboard won't work. So anyway, we'll get a hold of Kyle this week, and he'll catch us up on Cape Ann League stuff. We'll do a post on that. Meantime, we'll take a break and come back with Gary Larrabee as you are listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives were affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
All righty, we're joined now a little bit late, but we're joined nevertheless with Gary Larrabee, who is a sports historian, golf writer. Gary, are you okay? The house all right, and you can get out of the house? It's all shoveled out and everything?
Everyone's doing fine, yes. The snowblower works beautifully, and my back still works a little bit too.
My neck is killing me. Tim, you got a snowblower?
Two.
Two?
Two in case one breaks down, and one of them broke down a lot. During the last
storm. Oh, that works. All right. Well, Gary, what's going on in the wonderful world of golf?
Well, we had a fantastic weekend, Rick. And Tim, I'm sure you know that with some surprise developments down the stretch in both the European Tour and the American Tour evolutions. If you remember that Will Zalatoris, who we thought was going to win his first PGA Tour event yesterday, he choked down the stretch, blowing an 8-foot putt in the last hole, which would have forced a playoff with Luke Liss, who we'll get to in a minute. Then Rory McIlroy took a gag over in Dubai, and he more or less handed the tournament to Victor Hovland, a very worthy champion. But nonetheless, he played the last three holes and four under par, so that says enough about Victor. But a couple of choke jobs, just like we saw probably in the NFL playoffs. Yes, he choking all over the place, guys.
Wow, yeah, that's a rough assessment of the weekend.
Indeed, but of course, we are happy, though, for Luke List, who won his first tournament yesterday in a playoff against Zalatoris. Luke List, Tim, as we've talked before, 37 years old, a very late bloomer to get on the tour, 207 PGA Tour starts, and he finally breaks through at Torrey Pines in San Diego. A great story, really.
Well, it's always good to see, though, that, you know, we were talking the last couple of weeks about, you know, how this point in time in the PGA schedule is kind of like meant for the first time winners, for the guys who haven't had a lot of success and don't have a lot of success when all the top flight golfers get out there. It's like this is their time to shine, and that's just another example of somebody taking advantage of it.
Yes, it's so true. And you know, in the Luke List story, you know, Zalatoris had that putt on the last hole, an 8-foot birdie putt to win. He misses the putt. They go into a playoff. And if you saw the playoff on the very first hole, they both drove it into the right bunker, and the balls were like inches apart. And there was a very unique development in how they had to resolve that situation so one player could hit his ball so the other ball wouldn't be affected. I'm not going to go into the gruesome details, but Luke List wins his first tournament. Rory McIlroy could have won his, I don't know what it would have been for him, his 40th, his 50th. But instead, Victor Hovland won.
And of course, a familiar face went on the LPGA tour, where Lydia Ko, New Zealand's favorite golfing daughter, won for the second time in like 3 weeks. She's a little bit of a comeback for her after she was the dominant player on the LPGA tour 2-3 years ago. She's obviously back on his game and looks like she may be the dominatrix in 2022.
Yeah, I'm just looking up the story for some details, and she's only 24 years old, but we're talking about her like she's been on the tour forever.
No, you're right. She was an early bloomer, like a lot of them are out there on all the tours, but not in Luke List's case. Our own favorite player out there, Meghan Kane, K-A-N-G, Meghan Kane, not to be confused with Danielle Kane. She finished in the top 20, I believe. You know, she's from Rockland. And one of her sponsors is Tournament Solutions, based out of, I believe in a new report, led by Peabody's, Pam, her last name escapes me, Pam Barraby, and of course Damus is John Lawrence. So they were happy to see Meghan play well. She hasn't broken through yet with her first victory, but she will at some point.
You know, Kate, we were talking about Lydia Ko and how long she's been on the tour. She's 24. She's been on the tour since she was 15. And this was her 17th tour title.
Yes, I think the LPGA gave her a special exemption when she came over from New Zealand and gave her a shot. And lo and behold, she's been a pretty fair player, to say the least. Obviously, she's not burned out because she's making a great run to start the new season. And we'll see how it evolves with the next tournaments coming up all over the place.
Yeah, certainly leaves some interesting speculation, shall we say.
I'm sorry, Tim?
I said it'll leave things open for a lot of good speculation as the as both tours get underway, get further into their seasons.
Indeed, you're right. So true. And we're thankfully now into February as of tomorrow, and the boys are on the West Coast, and before you know it, they'll be in Florida, and of course the countdown continues to the 2022, the 122nd U.S. Open coming up at the Country Club in Brookline. Media Day will be May 2nd. I've learned about that. And, we don't know if John Rahm, the smashing, sensational Spaniard who almost won yesterday in San Diego, whether he will be there or not, but typically, as the defending champion, he either shows up, at least if not physically, at least Zoom-wise. So we'll hopefully look forward to seeing him. And I don't think John's ever played at the Country Club. Many of the players out on the tour now, well, the big names have not played the Country Club. But, of course, the other big name we're thinking about is whether we're hoping that Tiger Woods might play. But that's still very much up in limbo, just as speculation about Tom Brady is still very much up in the air.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. What's the story about if we're done with that? And I don't want to cut you short here, but what's the story about Salem Country Club, Gary? Because you've been talking about the excitement for the last several months, at least, not only about the restoration over at the Salem Country Club, but also the possibility of some big tournaments coming in here.
Correct. Well, the restoration project is 99%, and I wrote about it last week in the Salem News, and I did get a little bit of pushback from some disgruntled members, mostly in the veteran members side, more like the senior members side at the club. They were a little bit concerned with how much restoration was done and how much destruction was done. But I said a few of these guys who made contact with me, guys, relax. Let's wait and see what the golf course looks like by mid-late May, when you can really make some judgments. And I will see how it evolves. But from my perspective, they're just trying to make the golf course better, safer, and I think better from the agronomy point of view, where these trees can sometimes cause a lot of infringements on the golf course, and the bunker work was done very nicely from what I'm told from last fall, but there is some concern about whether too many trees were taken down. They're talking about over 400 trees were cut down.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how that all comes back and how it evolves into late spring when we can make a more appropriate assessment.
I have the article, Gary. I lost my subscription and had to renew it today. So I have the article now, and I'm going to post that article that you wrote 3 days ago. So I'll post that when we get done here tonight. I'll post it.
Thank you, Rick. And the other big piece of news, and that big, well, I wrote about last week, was the fact that one of our outstanding junior players from the last 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
Aiden Emmerich from Kernwood, from St. Mary's of Lynn, from Swampscott, has committed to play golf starting in September at Michigan State University. And I was joking to him the other day, Aiden, why don't you go someplace south? Well, as if you read the story, he felt very much at home at East Lansing, and he has family who lives right near the golf course, I should say, and near the school. So he'll have family by his side watching him play for the Michigan State Spartans, hopefully for the next 4 years.
I tell you, when you're away from home and you got somebody you can lean on like that, that's pretty cool. That's got to help his psyche and help his emotion, the emotional change from where he lives out to there.
No question. And I guess his uncle is out there with his family, and he's looking forward to it. He feels very comfortable, and it'll be exciting to see how his game develops over the next 4 years. We just had, of course, Stephen Delisio finish up his collegiate career at Duke. We have Chris Francoeur playing one more year from Amesbury down at University of Louisville, and exciting stuff all the way around.
Gary, I gave Mike Grenier a homework assignment last week, and I asked him to come up with an anecdote about a visiting player, not a Celtic, not a home, a home pro of people he's interviewed. And I've asked you over the years, because it just fascinates me, the stories you have. Can you come up with another anecdote? Maybe a Masters related, as it's coming up. But is there somebody you could mention next week and talk about who was either a great interview or a not so great interview? And you never talk negatively, so let's go with a great interview.
I look forward to it. I'll give it to you.
Awesome, awesome. Tim, any final questions for Gary?
No, we've hit on quite a few. The world of sports is forever changing, Gary. And I just saw a note that former professional basketball player, NBA player J.R. Smith, is now playing as a freshman on his college golf team. How about that one?
That's pretty good. And of course, you can play one sport in college, go off and be a successful professional player, but you can go back to school,
yep,
try another sport, and that's well within NCAA regulations. And he loves golf. There's been a lot of stuff written about him over the last several months, and he's got some serious golf game. Let's see how he does with the spring season coming up.
All right, Gary, enjoy the hot tub and relax those muscles you've been using, and stay warm.
I'm in the hot tub right now. Thank you for reminding me.
All right, Gary. Take care. Thank you so much. See you next week.
Stay well, guys.
All right.
See you, Gary.
That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian, and a walking encyclopedia once again. We're going to check in with another one in a minute here. Mike Grenier, who's also a sports encyclopedia. This is MSNO Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And we'll take a break and come back with Mike.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, sports writer. Basketball, really, what I, the basketball.
Basketball, Rick, is the word you're looking for.
No, basketball, what am I looking for?
Oh. Aficionado.
That's the word.
That's a great word. That shows you the education level that Tim has had.
Well, yeah, I have to dig deep for words now, man, and I'll tell you, I get stuck, so it's kind of embarrassing, but yeah.
And Mike, yeah. He has a very small shovel.
That's what I wanted to say. So, Mike, I don't know where you want to start.
Well, you usually start, Rick, by saying the Celtics are just 500 teams. They're actually a game over 500 now.
Well, till tonight. They're playing tonight, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, they're playing the first place Eastern Conference Miami Heat. The Heat are missing four starters.
Oh, well.
So, therefore, they actually have a chance to go to two games over 500.
Oh, I was talking the other way. They won't show up now.
Oh, well, I don't know. It's 12 to 5 right now, Boston.
All right. Well, let's we got about 15 minutes here more.
Yeah, sure.
Before we go over and turn. All right. So we can hammer that again and get the latest, because I do think one silver cloud in the lining, maybe two, which we can get to later, are the Twins are playing very well. The Jays are playing very well together. Marcus Smart seems to be playing an inspirational basketball, and Robert Williams is becoming a force. So we can talk about that, but I want to hear your anecdote first. I want to hear you tell me about a visiting player or maybe a non-Celtic that you interviewed that was of interest.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk basketball, I think one of my favorites of all time was Julius Erving.
Oh, Dr. J.
Dr. J. That team, Rick, and you know, having roots in Philadelphia,
and UMass.
And the rivalry between the Celtics and the 76ers, especially in the early 80s, those were phenomenal games because you had Bobby Jones, you had Julius Erving, you had Maurice Cheeks against the Celtics core of, you know, Bird and you know, McHale and all that. We had some phenomenal games. Now, Julius Erving, who came out of UMass, and of course who played in the ABA before really striking it rich in the NBA, he was one of the smoothest and most genuine interviews for, I think, visiting writers, when he would come to the Garden, mm-hmm. or he would speak to Celtics beat writers, and when we'd go to Philadelphia to cover the playoffs, which Gary Larrabee often did with me, we get to talk to Julius in the locker room, or even before the game, and he was knowledgeable. He was intelligent. He could fascinate you with stories about his early days, like at UMass, playing in the cage, right, Rick? The cage.
Oh, the old cage. Oh, yeah, man.
The old cage.
His afro used to come into the gym before he did.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just so fascinating to talk to. Really knew his basketball. I don't think he even really knew the impact that he was having at the time as maybe the first of the really, I mean, there were guys who came before him who had these phenomenal moves to the hoop and could, you know, the dunking part and all those great, great moves and suspending himself in the air for 27 seconds, you know. But he was a very down-to-earth guy when you wanted to interview him anytime, before the game, a couple hours before the game or after the game. And he would hold court. And you didn't have to be from the Philadelphia Inquirer. You didn't have to be from the Boston Globe. You didn't have to be from one of the big papers, the New York Times, and all those papers that covered those great rivalry games between the Celtics. You could be from the Salem News. You could be from the Brockton Enterprise. You could be from the Lynn Item. And Dr. J would treat you as an equal in terms of just talking basketball and trying to enlighten you. And he thoroughly enjoyed that Celtics, Philly rivalry. And of course, we remember the night, Gary, Rick, you would too, the night in the preseason game, when Bird and Dr. J went at it verbally, and of course, and then like there was a chokehold there. I think it was Bird with the chokehold, and it was like so shocking to see these two great stars going at each other in an altercation. It didn't escalate too much, but it looked threatening there for a while. And I know I was at that game, and I remember talking to Dr. J afterwards, and he was as surprised as anybody that Larry Bird would go after him. But they kind of both were able to put it away after one game. In other words, it didn't linger. It was not a thing where they hated each other. As a matter of fact, they had great respect for each other. Something set Bird off that night, and Dr. J wasn't going to back down, and had that confrontation, you know?
I'm glad to hear that about Julius Erving, because I was, and I'll let Tim take over here in a second. I was a senior at UMass when Dr. J was a sophomore. That was his last year there.
Yeah.
So he was a freshman also. I saw him play. And I did see him play in the cage. And when you watched him, man, you knew you were watching something special. And I remember reading, I think it was in Sports Illustrated, and I may have this wrong, but it had to do with the description of he was the first NBA player to play above the rim, whatever that meant.
Right. I don't think he was. I mean, Elgin Baylor could play above the rim back in the early 60s. He was an incredible athlete.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. J came along at a time where, you know, he got more publicity for it. There were more TV outlets to show the highlights and the highlight reel plays that he would put together. And here's the good one, Rick. You being from Philly, or you having the roots in Philly, last week
I saw the game.
the Dr. J on the Jumbotron.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, Julius Erving, Irving, like as if he was related to Kyrie. You know.
Yeah.
That was, talk about embarrassing, yeah. For an in-house feed to have his name spelled incorrectly. That was sacrilegious.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I saw the TV cameras on him up in the boxes. And it's funny, my future son-in-law works at the Wells Fargo right now.
Yep.
And that incident where they had to throw a couple of guys out, man, you know, it just made me nervous. But
right.
Great to see. And you know, Dr. J looks great. He, you know, it,
yep.
those old timers, man. It's funny for me to say he's an old timer. Tim, join in here, please. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't go to UMass, Rick. I'm sorry. You know.
But Tim, we both know how great. And Rick, really, that was a heated rivalry in the early 80s, and it was just a phenomenal rivalry. I remember back, the Celtics were trailing the 76-3-1.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Series, and they came back and won the series. You know, like it was just, they had a great heated rivalry, but it was a lot of respect. Bobby Jones was the class act, Maurice Cheeks, and you had Darryl Dawkins, Chocolate Thunder. He had one of the first catchy nicknames. During that period,
I sat next to him one night. Remember the old garden where the press would sit under the baskets with the school desks? I sat there one night. He was playing for New Jersey, and I was at the end in a corner, and he was right next to me. And I've told Tim this story, and I am not kidding, Mike. Each of his thighs was bigger than my torso.
Right.
The biggest guy I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah. He was one of those first sculpted.
No.
Really sculpted, unlike Zion Williamson. He was really sculpted and could play the game. And, of course, I think he passed away early, didn't he, Rick? Darryl Dawkins. Yeah.
I met one of the 76ers. My buddy and I, we used to go into Boston and go to Tia's at the Marriott on the Wharf.
Yes.
That was a popular place for visiting pro teams to come and hang out. And one night we were up on a Friday, we were up there. And after the game with the Celtics, the center,
Caldwell Jones.
Thank you.
Yep.
Caldwell Jones came in and sat down, and I just said, I got to go talk to this guy. I moseyed on over, introduced myself, sat down. We had like a 20-minute conversation, and he was as pleasant and you know, just talking about NBA life and the Celtics arriving and all that. It was the cool. I went out of there walking on clouds.
Oh yeah. I mean, Rick, all those, like I said, were great. And of course, Billy Cunningham was the coach of those early those teams, and he was great to talk to as well because he had a history as a great player prior to that. And Rick, if we want to go back, I mean, those Philly rivalries, those early rivalries when you had Chet Walker and those guys playing, and Wilt Chamberlain.
Hal Greer, was he one of them?
I mean, it was a phenomenal rivalry going back to the 50s and the Bill Russell era. Those are great rivalries right there.
But what I love, Mike, when you tell us these things is the fact that these guys, they're icons on television, especially now with ESPN, of course.
Right.
But they're human beings, and when you talk to someone like Dr. J, who looks you in the eye, gives you the time, understands his position, understands who he is, there's a certain humility there that I recognize in the athlete, but also it's got to make you feel really good about your profession and how you write.
Yep. Well, you know, it's funny. Back in those days, you could talk to players, let's say, a couple hours before the game, and you got to, you know, I used to love to get there early because you'd be able to go to eat the locker room and talk to players, you know. Didn't matter, baseball, basketball, whatever. I could do it in any sport. And one day, in the playoffs, the Celtics were about to play the 76. It might have been a Sunday afternoon. I got there really early, and Dr. J was just sitting along courtside, and he had his family there, and he introduced me to his wife's turquoise. You can't forget a name like turquoise. And I just remember he was just so pleasant. It was like he was introducing me, you know, like, here's my wife, turquoise.
Yeah, like a friend of the family. That's cool.
Yeah, you know, and it was just great. And but that's the type of individual he was, down to earth. He would talk to the media. He wasn't shying away from it and or putting his headphones on and saying, get away. He was easy to talk to along with that whole group, including Darryl Dawkins, Mo Cheeks, who was kind of a quiet guy, shy guy. Lionel Hollins was the other guy on that team. And, they were just a great group to talk to. And, of course, they had that phenomenal rivalry with the Celtics in the early 80s. And Billy Cunningham was, of course, the year that they beat the Celtics at the Garden and were moving on to the finals.
Beat L.A.
Beat L.A. I mean, Billy Cunningham was genuinely moved by that, moved almost to tears. You know, I covered that game, and I just remember he was really shook up in a good way after that game.
Tim, did you see that game?
I'm trying to remember. It's quite a few years ago, Rick. Come on now, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, I remember watching it on television, and I was so crushed, okay? Yeah. And when the Garden fans started that, Tim, it was like, you got to be kidding me. This is the classiest thing, and I was young, but this is the classiest thing I've ever seen in sports. Because you were there, Mike, but it was pretty loud, wasn't it?
It was very loud. It was, you know, it started off as a kind of a chant from a small section of the crowd, but it was quickly picked up within seconds. and the whole Garden crowd was there, beat L.A., and
yeah.
You would have thought the 76ers were playing at home
right.
in Philly, and the crowd encouraging them for the next round of the playoffs, the finals, the NBA finals. So, yeah, it was a classy thing. It's still remembered to this day. I'm sure it's referred to in books, you know, the sports books about the Celtics or the 76ers, you know. It was a great thing to do. And, you know, I think the Garden fans really respected how not only how good the 76ers were, but how classy they were as a team. And you know, two organizations that really respected each other. The players on both teams were really superb players, you know.
We look back to that mid-70s team and the rivalry and between the Celtics and the Sixers. The total talent that the Sixers had on that team was just scary, you know.
Right.
And you wonder how they didn't win more titles because you're thinking, oh, my God, from the
–
and a dominating center, they had – you know, multiple power forwards. They had, you know, multiple guards that were, you know, they had shooting guards, point guards. I mean, it was like, oh, my God. You sit there and you go, how do you beat these guys? And then, you know, Celtics always managed to find a way because they played with probably as much talent as the Sixers had, but they had the ability to find the way to win. And you know that would be a great source of frustration for the Sixers, but you look at the talent down the lineup and you're going, I don't want to play tonight.
I mean, you could have made up an Eastern Conference All-Star team strictly from those two rosters. And you'd take on the entire world with that.
Hey,
if you combine Dr. J and Bird and McHale and you know, Darryl Dawkins and Caldwell Jones and Bobby Jones and...
Yeah, you got Bobby Jones and Kevin McHale coming in off the bench.
Oh, yeah.
Dream team. hey, Mike and Tim, have you read about Joel Embiid's antics the last couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, I know that he's been on a tear, Rick. I've seen him play several games, you know, 40-something points and 18 rebounds, 36 points and 16 rebounds. I think part of his motivation, he wants to be in a good spot for the playoffs. He wants to see. However, I think part of his motivation is that he can't stand Ben Simmons. And I think he wants to show that he can carry the load and make the 76ers a real threat in the Eastern Conference without Ben Simmons, who, of course, has been sitting it out all year.
I was thinking a little bit more along the lines of what he did off the court. And there was a couple of things. I can't remember the other one. But one of the things was he got into a brouhaha with a little guy. And I say that advisedly, obviously.
Yeah.
But the guy went up to about, you know, his armpits. And they got a technical foul. And Embiid said, he ended up paying for it for the other guy's technical foul.
Oh yes, I saw that he was exactly. He was going to offer up. He didn't steal the guy. Deserved to have a technical, I believe, right?
Yeah, and he's done a couple of other things like that. So he seems to be a pretty classy guy.
Well, the thing is about him, Rick. He's actually he should really be in the conversation for MVP right now because he is putting up some prodigious numbers, both in terms of points and rebounds. He shoots like 80 or 90% from the foul line. He's doing everything for that team, and he's making them. I mean, right now they're third or fourth spot in the Eastern Conference, and they're solid, solid record. And but they seem to be getting better as the season progresses. You know.
Yep.
So Embiid is a real monster, and I tell you what, I watched him against the Lakers a few nights ago against Anthony Davis, who had just come back from an injury, and Anthony Davis, of course, is the linchpin along with LeBron James of their championship hopes. And by the way, the Lakers are 24-27. So they are underachieving big time. But here's my point. Embiid outplayed Anthony Davis in a big way in a 76ers beatdown the other night. And he is having just, I think, by far his best season, Joel Embiid.
Hmm. So. Tim, are you there?
Yeah. Well, you know, for any team to, and you know, we've talked about this, for any team to succeed now, you know, especially as the season wears on and you get ready for the playoffs, Your key players have to perform.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, is he trying to prove a point that he can carry the team and get himself ready for the playoffs? Well, this is where you sort of do that. You begin to put out an impression. You begin to send down signals that you know, not only is he, but the team itself is one to be looked at as a serious contender. And I think the Lakers just have too many egos right now, and as they get older, they're having a harder time to suppress those egos.
Well, the Lakers are 24-27. They've been a huge disappointment. Of course, once they acquired Russell Westbrook, everyone made them the odds-on favorite because they had Anthony Davis, they had Westbrook, they have LeBron, and they have guys, Avery Bradley, who used to form a Celtic. But all those guys have gotten up there in age, and they just haven't meshed as a team, and they're showing their age. And LeBron, who's been Mr. Indestructible, really, over the years, he never seems to have a serious injury because he takes care of his body. You got to give LeBron all the credit for that. He really takes care of himself. He's missed a few games this year with injuries, so age is creeping up on him, too. But they have not played well together. And Russell Westbrook, who, you know, was averaging a triple-double with the Oklahoma City Thunder and just 3 or 4 years ago, he is not nearly the same player as he was in his heyday. He's on the back nine, as Gary Larry might like to say. You know, so they have a lot. Carmelo Anthony comes off the bench and sometimes gives them a lift, but they've been an extremely more inconsistent than the Celtics, even given their talent level, because they have far more talent. I think overall, 1 through 10, let's say, they have much more talent than the Celtics.
Right.
They have not played.
Well, you know, but Mike, by name, they have much talent than the Celtics. But by age and athleticism, maybe they don't.
I agree. And you know, Tim, I think I mentioned LeBron James, and for a while, he was one of the, in minutes played, he was like second or third. This guy's like been around, he's like 36 years old, and he's been around for 17, 18. He was averaging 35, 36. That's too many minutes for a guy in the regular season that they're going to count on heavily during the postseason. That's too much for a guy like LeBron James to be. I've seen games where he's played, they win by 3 or 4 points, and LeBron has to play 39 or 40 minutes. That just won't work come May. He'll be worn down. So the coach is trying to save his own job. He has to win games. They're 3 games below 500, and LeBron is playing more minutes than he should. So they're in trouble a little bit. And, you know, I don't know. I think if the Celtics, they won't be beating the Lakers. They need the team, I think, is going to make the finals. We don't have to.
Right.
Love to see a classic rivalry renewed, but that isn't going to happen. I'll tell you what. I mean, the Phoenix Suns is like 41-9, and looked like a clear-cut favorite to get back to the finals, and the Eastern Conference is kind of a little bit wide open. I like the Bucks, but the Heat are very good. You know, so Philly is coming along real strong. It wouldn't surprise me if they made it. We look at Steph Curry, we know how great he is, but his brother Seth Curry is a pretty darn good little player as a three-point shooter for the 76ers.
Yes, he is. All right, we gotta get out of here in a minute, Mike, but I wanna, do two things. First of all, we're doing a poll. Brady or Rodgers MVP?
Brady.
Okay, that was quick.
I mean, you're talking 5,316 yards. You're talking 43 touchdown passes regular season. I don't see how you can ignore those numbers and the fact that they still had a great record when they lost Chris Godwin and a couple of guys that went out were gone for the season.
All right. Now, the next thing is, you want to do another homework assignment?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm thinking, when I first started at WESX, I was so nervous going over to the Marblehead, the Eastern Yacht Club to cover the yacht races.
Yeah.
And John Ahern from the Boston Globe, Mr. Ahern, took me under his wing. I don't know if you remember him or ever met him.
I sure do. I used to see him at certain games.
And he had that fedora on. And he took me under his wing. I guess I want to ask you about going back to your very early days of interviewing the pros, and maybe a nervous interview. You know, when you were little,
when
you had the butterflies, and some guy kind of came in and just really talked you off the ledge, and you felt good going home.
Yeah, matter of fact, as soon as you mentioned that, that's one. It was a professional sports team owner who sort of like calmed me down.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about that next week. I'll be glad to.
Perfect, perfect. And for you, I'm whenever the school break is, I'll be off for a week or two then. So
right,
just keep that in mind. But anyway, Tim, final. You get the final question, answer, comment.
So, like Rick mentioned that he was going over to watch the yacht races.
Yes.
No, not watch. Cover them.
Cover the yacht races. Okay.
For WESX. Yeah.
My dad used. Once told me that, you know, he and my mama, they were dating. He used to go down along Revere Beach and watch the submarine races.
Well, you know,
he's not letting us on.
Rick, similar to your experience with the yacht racing, I was sent a couple of times to cover the show horses in Hamilton.
There you go. There you go.
Not the polo event, which would have been more exciting.
Right.
These were the horses. They were categorized with the dressage and all
that. Yeah, and the how hands and all,
I was totally clueless that I would have to find someone who knew about horses to tell me about that.
I could have done okay because my daughter rode dressage, so I would have been okay with it. But she would have to hold my hand every step of the way. I know when you're out of your element, it's like, are you kidding me? What am I supposed to do?
we've all gone that route at different times.
Oh man, Mike, this has been fun. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, Dr. J, like I said, Rick, he may even have a better feeling about him now because he was a class act all the way. I think to this day he's still a class act.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's cool. All right, Mike, we'll talk to you later. Be well.
Here. Tim, you too. Have a good week.
You too, Mike. Take care.
All right.
Bye. All right, that's Mike Grenier, who was a sports historian, sports writer. And, Tim, it takes you back, but it's like it was yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was those great times. And, you know, we watched it for the basketball, not so much for the personalities, even though these guys had a lot of personality. It was the style of basketball that they played, you know, and the manner in which they played it that left such an impression on us that enabled us to remember particular games, particular moments. And I'm not sure, you know, kids today who follow the game can remember it in that fashion. Out of the, oh, yeah, that slam dunk. Well, you know, come on, will you?
You're right. It was the overall aspect of the game, not the individual ballerina movements, ballet movements. Yeah, great story. I'm glad to hear that about Julius Erving because he's always been one of my sports heroes. And you know, to watch him on the screen the other night, I watched that game, that Philadelphia game, and they did show him up in the box seats, and geez, he looks as great as ever, man. It's really cool.
Very statesman-like with the white hair, the gray hair.
Oh, absolutely. But so well-spoken. And I'm glad to hear that he's as nice a man in person as he appears to be. That's really cool. Okay, Coach, what else we got here? I guess we'll go watch the Celtics?
I have my British crime dramas to watch now.
Okay. All right, Tim. Thanks so much, brother. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty, Rick.
Be well, Tim.
Yeah, bye.
Take care, Coach. That is Tim Kearns, our MSO sports analyst. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell will be hosting the Salem News Sports Writers podcast on Wednesday. That'll drop around 8 a.m. Be sure to listen in as all the Salem News Sports Writers plus Nick Kukru of the Gloucester Times will be checking in primarily on high school sports, and they've got, you can't even imagine how much coverage they have. They talk about everything and everybody from a really positive standpoint. That'll be Wednesday morning here on MSO News Sports. So thank you to Bill Newell for hosting that. That's coming up this week. Also thanks to Bill Newell for just kind of putting this whole thing together overall over the years, and I really appreciate his talent and his efforts and his compassion for high school sports in the area. Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. As you just heard, Tim Kearns is our MSO sports analyst. I'm Rick Moore, and I'm kind of the host of this thing. I'm glad you were with us. If you want to contact us, it's msonewsports@gmail.com. It'll take care of this edition of North Shore Sports Night. Thank you for being with us. This is msonewsports.com.